Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I am your host, Kenny Bedwell, and today I'm sick, okay? But I'm recording this podcast nonetheless. So props for the dedication, right? Give me a round of applause while you're driving or exercising or however you're listening to this. But today, I'm still on my A game, even though I'm sick. I've got good information and I want to share it with you and I want to get it out in the podcast. So let's dive into it today. Where should you invest? Now, I'm going to break this episode, like I do all my other episodes, into two parts. So part one, I'm doing. Part two, I'm also going to do. Surprise, spoiler alert. But I'm actually going to give you the list of markets you should invest in, and I'm going to talk about those markets in detail. And this is more so for 2025. I know I did a top markets, where should you invest for markets specifically a few months ago. But this episode, though, I want you to listen to first before I go into the list. Because one of the things I've noticed with especially new investors is this idea of what I call herding, chasing the herd, meaning they tend to listen to someone, maybe like myself, and who says, hey, these are top markets to go invest in, and here's the data behind it. And hey, that sounds, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. I trust him. I'm going to go check out those markets. And that's fine and dandy. But the reality is they go to those markets and I'm like, oh crap, my budget's too low, or maybe my budget's higher and I'm not seeing the revenue numbers I want to see there, or it could work, but it just depends. And so that's what I want to get cleared out first. So in the next episode, I can literally just dive into the list and you're well prepared to know which markets on that list are actually good fits for you and not just good fits for other people. So let's talk about that. So before you choose a market, before you choose markets to look into, I want you to think about two important key principles, and this is what I'm going to pretty much spend most of the time on, is understanding your budget and your ROI goals, okay? So let's talk about budget. When it comes to determining your budget, there are two key, so this is a budget to buy and purchase a short-term rental. Some of you don't have a property yet, and you might be wondering, is now the time to actually purchase a short-term rental? Am I ready? Do I have enough capital? Do I have enough funds to do it? I've seen people buy short-term rentals as low as $50,000 and as high as $400,000. Okay, so usually I recommend $50,000 minimum. If you don't have 50K yet, probably not a good time to go buy a short-term rental. You're probably not ready yet. You're not going to have enough savings either, like rainy day funds, to set aside in case something goes bad. So there is kind of a minimum, but it's about 50K. And if you don't have 50K, you can go co-host, you can go do rental arbitrage, you can do other options out there to get money so you can eventually acquire. But the goal is to buy. Let me be very clear on that. The goal is to actually buy properties, not rent them and not co-host them. Why? Because you get tax benefits and you get appreciation. It's a long-term investment. And that's what we're here to do on top of getting the cash flow. You don't have the cash, go out and do these other things. There's no harm with that. There's no problem with that. Go and do that to scale until you can actually start purchasing. Okay. So you got 50K or more. Now we're ready to talk about budget. So there are two limiting factors when it comes to your budget. I call it bankability and affordability. Okay. What does bankability mean? Let's start with that one. So if I'm going to buy a short-term rental and it's not going to be cash. Okay. So if you have cash to buy a property full out with cash, you could probably skip this part. But if you don't, which most of us don't, we're going to get a bank loan. So that means we're going to go to a lender. They're going to look either at our tax returns or the rentability of the property, the profitability of the property, just maybe even the investment. It just depends on the type of loan. But they're going to look at the situation and they're going to go, are you bankable? Okay. So the reality is, like, you know, there's debt to income ratio. You could be doing a commercial loan. You could be doing all these different types of loans. But it really comes down to your cash on hand, right? So if I have only $50,000, okay, well, the bank's probably going to say, well, look, you only have 50K. You're probably not going to be able to get that $1 million property, right? So the bankability can limit how much we actually buy. So the bank says, now on the flip side, if I'm self-employed or maybe my situation's a little bit iffy with my income, the way it appears to a bank, the bank says, hey, look, you might have a lot of money, but we can't lend based on our requirements. We can't lend you $1 million, even though you have $200,000. We might only be able to lend you $400,000. So bankability can actually limit what your budget is. So don't just go off what your cash on hand is, which is affordability. And we're going to get to that in a second. So bankability is number one. You always, when you're starting your journey, when you're trying to figure out where you should invest and what you should invest, you need to go talk to a lender. Okay. You need help finding a lender. Please reach out to me. I know lots of lenders, lots of different products, and I can refer you to one that I know that they do a good job. So bankability is number one. Number two, affordability. And this directly correlates with cash on hand. Okay. Meaning, okay, the bank might come to you and say, hey, Johnny, man, you are in a really nice financial situation. We can give you a loan up to $5 million. And you're like, sweet, let me go buy a $5 million property. But then you're like, crap, I only have $100,000. Well, that's a problem, right? You're not, what $5 million property can you buy with $100,000? Unless you're doing some like creative financing deal, then you're not using the bank. So when you're thinking about affordability and your budget, a lot of times it has to do with your cash on hand. And that's why I want to share with you an important rule I just came up with, not on the spot right now, but just in the last few months and experience, I call it the 20% rule. So what is the 20% rule? The 20% rule says after your down payment and your closing costs, you should prepare to spend at least 20% on improvements to the property. Okay, so what are improvements to the property? Are you talking about like renovations and, you know, replacing shutters and doors and windows and stuff? Maybe that's part of it, right? So we talk about renovations and updates, but we're investing in short-term rentals. So improvements to the property actually mean the design, decor, and furnishings and amenities, right? Because you're adding these things, you're improving these things to be a better property. And most properties, let's face it, they're not going to come 100% ready to go. They might be brand new construction, which is great, but you have to add things to it. Or it might already have some of the furnishings, but it doesn't have everything you need. So you need to have a budget set aside. And that budget can impact what you can afford. Meaning, if I go out and I have $100,000, if I'm doing a 10% down loan, just let's do simple math here. So that means I'm buying a $1 million property. That leaves me nothing left over for improvements like the furnishings, the design, decor, amenities, or even renovations if you're going to do renovations. So there has to be some left over. And to be a top property, you have to invest in the property. Okay. You hear me talk a lot about building the moats and being different and standing out and long-term stuff and catchy phrases that you're like, yes, it's all true. But if you don't have the money to do that, then like you can't, you know what I mean? You're not going to be the top dog. So you need to go in. Don't over leverage yourself. Don't overextend just to buy the most expensive property out there. Do not do that. If you have 100K, okay, you need to pay for a property and then you need to have something left over to improve that property. And budgeting up front, if you had $100,000, remember 20% rule, but that's not with the down payment. So if I get approved for 10% down, okay, max is going to be $1 million with $100,000, right? But maybe the bank says, hey, you can only do $700,000. That doesn't even matter then. I still need to have money for improvement. So I have to take 20% of the purchase price, right? So let's say it's $500,000. Well, 20% of the purchase price is $100K to put into the property. That leaves me nothing for the down payment. So I'm going backwards here. So let's just do some math on this. If I have $100,000 in cash, what is my true budget with a 10% down second home loan with the financing? If it's 20% down, that changes too. So if I have $100,000 in this example, my max purchase price budget is really going to be about like $350,000, maybe $400,000 if it's already ready to go and I don't have to put a whole lot of money into it. But remember, what did I just say? You should expect to have to put money into a property. And that's okay, because when you do, you will be the top dog. You will be successful. Over leveraging yourself, overextending yourself based off of just, I have all this money and I can go to that purchase price, isn't the best play. Don't do that. Don't fall victim to that. So understanding your budget is based off the two key things. Remember, affordability and bankability. I got those backwards, but whatever. Okay. We understand that. Now let's talk about ROI goals. Remember, I've done the first episode is on cash on cash versus cash flow. In the last, 8 months since I launched this podcast, I've been listening. I just find very few people that really should be caring about cash on cash. it's really about cash flow. If you're sitting here going, I want to leave my W-2 job, or I want to have some more time freedom, I want to cut back from anything, it's all about time. Time is money, right? You've heard that phrase before. And so ideally, your ROI goals are all about the cash flow you generate from the property. Okay. So although it might be cool to say you got a 30% cash on cash return, if that's only $5,000 a year, is that really something to brag about? I've said this before, but quality over quantity. I want to make more money with fewer doors. I want to make more money with less headaches, because let's be honest, less doors equals less headaches, especially in this industry of short-term rentals. So when it comes to determining what your goals are, I want you to focus on what you would minimally be happy with in order to achieve that particular goal of whatever you're trying to achieve. So for example, like, you're not going to leave your job from one property, but that one property can help you get closer to leaving your job. And what I mean by that, though, is that buying a single property is going to cash flow something like $20,000 or $30,000. If it only cash flows $5,000, that could be considered a win, but how much of a win for you? And you've just spent more time to get to that point. So depending on your capital, depending on your time and where you are in life will help you determine what your goals are. One of the biggest lessons that I've personally learned from this being in this industry and doing this is that one property, like small properties, especially like one or two bedrooms, literally take about the same amount of time as the larger properties do. The big five bedroom I have, it's kind of like a 5 to 7. It's got 7 bedrooms, but legally I say 5. So if the city's ever listening, it's a 5 bedroom. I can only list it as a 5 bedroom, but it does have 7 bedrooms in it. And there are beds and additional bedrooms. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. But the reality is I spend about the same amount of time between the 1 and the 5. And so understanding that, like, well, hey, I can make more money from the 5 bedroom and I'm spending the same amount of time as the 1 bedroom. So if I get rid of the 1 and upgrade to a bigger property, boom. And that's part of scaling. But the important lesson with scaling is I had to start somewhere. Okay. And I don't want to discourage you when you're coming up with your goals and you're thinking about where you should invest and like what's going to make sense. Is if you have a limited budget, you're in a box, right? You can only start with maybe the 1 bedroom. But if you have a larger budget, don't just go for the 1 bedroom because you're scared. Okay. So for those of you who are in the box and you've got to do the 1 bedroom or the 2 bedroom max, that's okay. Don't, like, it's not spilt milk. You want to win. You want to be successful. And maybe taking that $5,000 a year is a big win for you. And that's great. That's somewhere to start. But that next one, it better be way more than 5K. Okay. And for those of you who you're a physician, you're a high W-2 income earner, you're already making good money. Okay. Well, yeah, making $5,000 a year isn't even remotely worth your time. Just go work more hours. Go do a locum or something. Okay. Like, just go do something else. That's not the right play for you. So make sure when you're determining your goals, you understand, number one, where you fit, but number two, that it's worth your freaking time. It's cash flow, right? That's what we're talking about, baby. All right. So let's sum this sucker up, because understanding, number one, what you can afford based on literally the percentages I just told you and everything, affordability, bankability, and then number two, understanding your cash flow goals will actually help dictate where you can look. Let me give you an example. A lot of people, and I've even said, like, secret deal finding strategy. Remember that episode, or I don't remember what I called it, but I was talking about buying bigger properties. I love buying bigger properties. I think they're honestly the best play to go. You get the biggest or the best bang for your buck. So those bigger properties give you the best bang for your buck. And I see a lot of people going after them, and I think that's great. But the problem is when you see these top markets lists and you have a limited budget, you're not going to be able to afford the bigger properties. So understanding, if your budget's low, it's okay to go for bigger properties. But if you're going to choose some of these markets, then it's going to be a smaller property. So, like, kind of understand the differences. Don't weigh out the markets. Oh, Kenny said I need to buy a 4 or 5 bedroom and there are no 4 or 5 bedrooms I can afford in that market. That market's out. Okay. You're just going to have to go down. And if you're not okay with that, then yeah, that market is actually out. And there's a market that's on the list, West Virginia, in Berkeley Springs, where people with lower budgets, like $500,000, even $450,000, can get a 4, 5, or even a 6-bedroom property. Okay. And these properties are grossing and doing really well. So there's no problem with going to some of these markets. Just understand that your budget can limit where that actually sends you and how that works as you go through the actual top markets list. So anyway, I hope that you found some value in this, understanding one, your budget, how to determine your actual budget for short-term rentals. And then number two, once again, how to understand your goals. And if you need or have more questions on that, you need to go back to the very first episode of this podcast. So anyway, show up for the next episode. I know you will, because that's where I'm going to tell you where the top 10 markets are to invest for in 2025. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I'm going to tell you the markets, and you're going to hear it before everybody else, because you're special. And I want to give you a special gift for listening to me and putting up with my sick voice today. And that is my present to you, is you get to hear all the markets before they come out. And I swear, if you post them online, somehow I will ban you from listening to my podcast again. I'm just kidding. But yeah, seriously, don't do that. I'm not going to post. So this episode is going to come out in the middle of December. I'm not going to share that markets list until the end, very, very end, or the beginning of January. So feel honored. I'm just kidding. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I know you're going to show up for the next one of Cashflow Positive.